Just the people coming in and sitting over this side, there's a bit of a wobble in the screen here, so if you start feeling a bit seasick, just move to the other side, okay? Now my watch says 10:39. Is that right? Of course, my computer here says 8:39 because it's on Australian time. Okay, well, I'll get started. I thank you all for coming. My name's Carol Wapshear, and I'm a MVP for Forefront Identity Manager. And I work for a consulting company in Australia called Unify Solutions. We specialise in identity management, in particular using Forefront Identity Manager as the core technical component for those projects. And just before I kick off, can I make sure that everyone understands what we're talking about by identity management with FIM? Does everyone know what that actually is? In a nutshell, essentially what we're talking about is streamlining and, wherever possible, automating the creation of user accounts, updating user accounts, giving those user accounts access to stuff through roles and groups, and then eventually, you know, deprovisioning, taking away accesses as well. That's really the very core of what the product is about. We can do other stuff with other digital identities as well. So, you know, all this streamlining, automating these account management procedures, does that sound pretty simple? Straightforward? I know there's some people here who've been finding out how simple it is not. And in my session today, I actually want to talk about a lot of the things around FIM that make the project so difficult. Tomorrow at the same time, I have another session which is more technical best practices. But today, this is really all the other best practices that are every bit, if not more, important to the actual success of your project. Because no one wants their project to end up like this. Something that cost a lot to get where it did and wasn't much use when it got there. Now, this is an exhibit I saw a couple of weeks ago when I was at the National Australia Museum in Canberra with my kids. If you're ever passing through Canberra, excellent museum. And I was quite interested by this. I hadn't heard this story before. Apparently, the great 19th century explorer Charles Sturt once led an expedition into Central Australia looking for the inland sea. And because he expected to find a large body of water, he had his men drag a boat all the way through the Sturt and Simpson deserts. And I'm sure you can all imagine it didn't come in very handy. Now, why was he looking for the inland sea? Well, it was because everyone said it had to be there. And by everyone, of course, I mean people who had no idea what they were talking about. And so this puts me in mind of a couple of the great problems we face in identity and access management: bad information and unrealistic expectations. I'm sure these affect many IT projects. You can look at that and say, yes, this is always a problem. But in identity and access management, this can completely derail your project. More on that in a bit. There's another issue that causes us trouble with our identity and access management projects, and that is the existing environment. Now, it's very hard to have a picture of, you know, messed up user accounts, so bear with me on the metaphors, okay? Here we have a system. It's It's not the neatest. It's not the most efficient to manage, but it's working. So why do we need to change? Well, maybe we don't. Unless we have a period of rapid change, rapid expansion, or some other system coming down on top of this and relying on some measure of neatness and dependency that we're just not getting with this sort of by-hand administered system. And that's when we're going to start having trouble. So another couple of the big issues that can derail your identity management project before you even start: the existing data and the existing processes. And we'll get back to those in a bit later. So quickly, a session agenda for the rest of the session. I've sort of done it on a little project, you know, timeline here. So we've got our project planning, design. We do need to talk about data, implementation. And then I have a demo at the end, which I hope illustrates one aspect of return on investment you can expect to see from implementing a solution such as FIM. But first, talk a little bit about what Forefront Identity Manager 2010 R2 does for those who are not familiar with this product. Now, R2 is just recently out, last couple of months, and really, you know, FIM has become a bit of a suite of products now, it must be said. So I'm just going to very quickly go through the components that make up FIM. At the very core of FIM is the synchronization service. This is the component that's been in the product the longest. This is the service that sits in between all the directories, systems, databases where information about your digital identities live. So it might connect to the HR database, to Active Directory, to Lotus Notes, to Oracle databases, to things accessible via web services, whatever. We can pretty much connect to everything with FIM. And then it starts maintaining the connections. So this is Carol Wapshire's record in the HR database, and this is her user account in Active Directory, and this is her record in some other system. It maintains that connection, keeps everything up to date. When I change jobs or when I leave, then it can close things off appropriately. That is the fundamental use of the sync service. Another component that's been in the product for a very long time is password synchronization. This is Active Directory-driven password sync to other directories and applications. So at the point when a user changes their password in AD, we can pick up that new password and we can synchronize it through to other directories or applications where you would like your users to have the convenience of the same password. In 2010, the FIM service and portal were added. This is a SharePoint-based portal, and this, for the first time, gave us a way to actually interact directly with all that identity metadata that FIM was keeping to itself. And so now we can actually provide some self-service functionality where, for instance, we can allow users to go in and change their mobile phone number or request an application. And there's also a workflow component here. So we have notification, approval workflows, various other things that we can do. Self-service password reset has been in the product since 2010, but I've given it a little new badge here because it's actually quite overhauled in R2. And the best thing is we now have a proper portal for self-service password reset. In R1, we were a bit constrained to offering self-service password reset to our domain-joined internal users. Now we actually have a portal that we can make available either to internal users coming through an untrusted network or to external users if we should need to do that. We also have extra options for password reset. In the past, it was just type in a new password. Now we actually have one-time password gates as well via SSMS or secondary email. There's a new reporting module in R2. This is actually built on top of System Center Data Warehouse. So really, it's very much the idea is that you would already have System Center Data Warehouse and you're collecting a whole lot of other stats from other systems, and FIM is another feed into that. Behold is another new component. Microsoft actually bought this product. It was built to run on top of FIM. It is a complete role-based access control system in its own right. It has its own separate portal and management console. It does all this good stuff like roles based on org chart, based on, you know, attributes you might have manually assigned. It does separation of duties, compliance. And this is a free download for anyone who has the portal licenses. It's very new. And the last component is Certificate Manager. This was added into the suite in 2007. And again, this is a little sort of standalone component which actually automates the request and renewal of certificates. And then it links into the synchronization service. And the idea is that you might want to include certificate provisioning as part of your user provisioning. They have a secure token or something. So that, very quickly, is just the components of FIM. So let's have a little talk about planning. Now, the first thing I want to know when I talk to a customer about their identity and access management project is, why now? What's driving this? And the reason is that I've found that when identity and access management is initiated by the IT department as an efficiency measure, there's not enough drive for it, there's not enough money for it, there's not enough will to push it through. But when there's some other high-profile project and the CIO has staked his reputation, this is going to be live by December 2012, and suddenly everyone's realised that the identity layer really needs to be sorted out before this can happen. Well, this focuses people's minds, I have found. You know, doors open, money becomes available. So it's, you know, the fact of the matter is, well, I hate to say it, all my most successful identity and access management projects have been another project entirely. And FIM has almost been an enabling component of that larger project, and they're the ones where we've had the pressure and we've managed to get people to change the things they need to change. The other thing is about stakeholders. So the stakeholders in this case, you know, FIM can connect to all sorts of different applications and places where data is. And often those applications previously have been managed by hand, sometimes by one person, and they don't really want things to change. Potentially. These people can be your greatest help or your greatest hindrance. They need to be involved early on. Understand the environment. Don't believe people who draw you pretty diagrams showing inland seas. That's a great math, isn't it? So a couple of things here. One is I always ask to get account policies in writing. When I'm being asked to actually implement, particularly deprovisioning policies, disabling, I would like to see those policies actually written down somewhere so that when people say, why did FIM do this? I can say, well, because here's your written policy and that's what it says. Another thing is about talking to the people who really know. You know, people will tell you all sorts of things. They'll tell you what they think is right. They'll tell you what they hope is right. It's not always what is right. I had an experience last year where I was working with a customer on a very straightforward HR to Active Directory synchronization. So HR-driven provisioning, HR-driven deprovisioning, basic bread and butter stuff. Until he happened to find out from HR, and you know, there had been many conversations with HR, and this had never come up, came up right at the very end of the whole process. They actually were not putting people in the HR database until up to 5 days after they started work. Well, there goes your HR-driven provisioning. That was their process. A lot of these things can be quite difficult to tease out. The other thing is just about data analysis. Sometimes you will ask questions that no one knows the answer to. How many of your users have two user accounts? How many accounts have you got that haven't been logged into for 6 months? You know, things like this. Sometimes you really just have to get in there and start churning the data to figure that stuff out. Get the requirements. Here I'm sharing with you a picture of my shopping list. After certain young people in my household have been experimenting with the power of the shopping list to exert mind control over me while I'm at the supermarket. I'm sure we've all experienced the desirable requirements getting added to our projects. Happens a lot. And I think it's particularly so in identity and access management, because here we're often replacing processes that people have been doing by hand. And the fact is, you can't beat a human for just sheer flexibility and judgment and, you know, doing lots and lots and lots of little tasks that may seem like it's, you know, one or two simple things. But when you actually try and make a computer system replace them, it's a lot more complicated. So there's a real problem with identity management projects of, oh, and can it do this as well? And there's this other special case. And, you know, and sometimes we do this and sometimes we do that. And, oh, and there's these exceptions. The more you start adding these decision branches into your system, the more you weaken it. The more moving parts you have, the more there is to go wrong. So what are the essential requirements right now that we can focus on, and we'll get to the desirable ones later? Also, we need to focus on outcomes, not processes. It's not going to do things the same as they're done today. And getting specifics, this is very important. Customers will say to me, I want to synchronize HR to AD. And I go, right, okay, I'm going to need a little more than that. You know, in their mind, that's one requirement. But for me, okay, well, I need to know exactly under what circumstances should I provision that AD account? Where should I put it? There may well be variable locations. What attributes should I populate? Where am I going to get those attributes from? What else does the account need? Does it need a home drive, a profile drive, a mailbox? Does it need, you know, terminal services, profile settings? These are all the requirements that we actually need to get this thing properly configured. And don't try and do everything at once, and I've done some very childish little graphs for you here. But just to try and illustrate that, you know, as that requirement list grows, it's not a linear increase. I mean, I've said for development time it probably is, but the big problems are the testing and the risk. So the more decision branches you have, the more little if-then-else kind of rules you have, they all have to be tested, and they have to be tested with each other, their interaction with each other. So obviously this testing time is going to increase exponentially, as is our risk. It's very, very hard to fully test all all the possible scenarios ahead of time. So just be aware of that, and as much as possible, try and keep project phases short. I mean, that's the real message. Bite off small amounts at a time. Grow your identity management system in the environment. Don't try and do it all at once, because it won't work. Take it from me. Okay, a couple of things about design. Here's a nice little example of task automation. So, you know, it's a very simple thing. It's just automating the task of picking up a bin and chucking the garbage in the truck. When they bought these trucks in, we all had to get new bins, didn't we? Now, little mental exercise for you all. Have a little think about how you would have designed that arm if your number one requirement had been no one has to change what they're doing. Everyone has to have the same bin they've got already, with the shapes and the sizes and the lids and the ones with the big dents in the side. What would have that arm looked like? It would have been quite a bit more complicated than that, wouldn't it? Over-engineered, I think you'd say. A lot more expensive. More unreliable, more parts to go wrong. And it wouldn't have even worked in every situation. There would have been a percentage of bins it just couldn't pick up. So we got this nice task automation, but we had to change something as well. And we had to make things consistent so this could work. We need to think that way for the identity and access management as well. There will have to be change. We can't have every single user account in a completely different shape. There has to be some consistency. Also, some tasks must still be done by hand. So there's actually a guy who comes around my street, and this is not him, this is my husband dressed up as a garbage man, because I couldn't get up early enough to get the actual guy. But there is a guy, I've seen him really, really early in the morning running along and straightening all the bins so that they're all perfectly lined up and then the truck can just come past and pick them up. And obviously we still have to take the bin out and bring it back. Someone's got to drive the truck. You can't automate everything, and you shouldn't. Some things are not economically worthwhile to automate, and some things it just really doesn't make sense. So an example I often use is the SAM account name. If my name changes in the HR database, should my SAM account name be automatically renamed? Does anyone think it should be automatically renamed? I think not. I think that that's one thing that it needs to be arranged with the user. You know, ring up the user, we see your name's changed, do you want to change your SAM account name? We might be renaming your home folder at the same time. There are certain tasks that should never be automated. Now, mostly talking about things around FIM in this talk, but there is one technical concept about FIM that I think everyone needs to understand. So if you're talking with, you know, the application owners, the people who look after the data, you need to make sure they understand this concept as well. And that is that FIM is a state-based system. What we mean by that is that we only care about the current state of the data, then we apply our rules, and then we have the future state of the data. And that's all we care about. In particular, we don't care how it got into that current state. And this can be a difficult concept for some people. I've been working on integrating a service desk system into an existing FIM environment. And this service desk system, it's like 15 years old. It's terrible. And it's been managed by the same people by hand for this whole 15 years. And so, you know, there's been quite a lot of discussions with them about exactly what this means, automatically creating contacts in their database, keeping email addresses and phone numbers up to date. You know, I thought that they understood what was going on. So I wrote a document, and in this document I had a table, and in the table I had all the columns in their contacts table. And then I had which ones we were going to set on create of a new contact and which ones we were going to keep up to date all the time and where the precedent source was for those values. And I sent this document out to them, and the document came back with some comments and questions in it. And underneath this table, I'd put the comment, just to be 100% sure they understood, I'd put the comment, if a value is changed in the service desk system and not at the precedent source, then FIM will put it back to what it was before. And the application owner wrote under this, false. Changes we make will remain. And I just went, oh, you didn't get it, did you? You didn't get it, right? Got to explain this again. FIM can't know who made the change. And we shouldn't even try. We may be able to do some weird, unnatural programming to try and fudge that. But here's one thing I want to say. Don't compensate for bad data practices by complexifying your system. Because no one will thank you in the long run. It'll be like that garbage bin arm that's got all these sensors and rubbish on it, and 5% of the time it doesn't even work. Extending. So one of the strengths of FIM is that it's very extensible. And this is nice because everyone's environment is different. We've got different applications, we've got homegrown things, we've got all sorts of stuff, weird policies, different things that we need to get done, different priorities. So with FIM, we have always been able to get in there, write some .NET code, write our own workflow activities. I would just say, be, you know, sensible about it. I've put this rule of thumb here, 80% out-of-the-box functionality, 20% custom development. I mean, look, this completely depends on the environment. But I tell you, I've seen some horrific things where people have really got carried away with the whole extensibility, and they've ended up with something that they can't upgrade. We don't want that to happen. Now, if you stay within the parameters of what's supported in extensibility, you can upgrade it all the time. We've actually got code that was written and compiled on MIIS 2003, the version before last, which is actually still working exactly the same on FIM 2010 R2, because that code was written within the parameters of what's supported. So I guess what I'm trying to say here is try and use out-of-the-box functionality first, even if it means, and this is particularly true for the portal, it might not look like you first thought it was going to. You may have to change people's expectations a bit about what it's going to look like. But, you know, I think for long-term supportability, we should try and use out-of-the-box functionality as much as possible and then extend where necessary with due consideration and always staying within what is supported. And that'll keep working. So, data. I told you I needed to talk about data. If the sync engine is indeed an engine, then the oil it runs on is the data. And we all know that engines don't run well on dirty data. Dirty oil. Mixing my metaphors. Do you like this picture? This is actually supposedly a cigarette rolling machine that was patented in the 19th century sometimes. It's very convoluted, doesn't it? Let's try not to make our FIM sync services look that convoluted if we can. So what do I mean by clean data when I'm talking about identity? Well, it's these sorts of things. Unique identifiers. So whenever we look at a digital identity, we should be able to say, yes, we know exactly whose that is. So this might mean putting employee IDs on things, putting the email address back in HR, you know, these sorts of things. We need to have those unique identifiers. First name, surname is not a unique identifier. It's not even unique for the same person. So many people go by, you know, different nicknames and spellings. We need something else. Validated source data. So data where someone has actually been interested in ensuring that data is correct. So data about people's job and position is far more likely to be correct in the HR database than in Active Directory. Just that sort of thing. Try and get close to the place where, you know, things will break if the data's not right. Consistent formatting is another difficult one. I had another experience with this same service desk system where they wanted us to populate a site code. And in the service desk system, they use around 50 site codes which have to match what's in the asset management system. It's all tied into their back-end reporting. That's all fine. I said, what's the precedent source for people's site? And I was told the corporate directory. Unfortunately, in the corporate directory, the location fields are managed by hand, free text. Someone did a little data crunching on that. We had over 2,500 unique location strings in the corporate directory, and I'm supposed to convert that into 50 possibilities in the service desk system. It's not possible. You could do the fanciest regex in the whole world, you're not going to be able to do it. So we do actually need consistent formatting. And you know, free text is the enemy. We should be hitting down on that free text whenever we can, because you can't use it for anything. You can't use it for deciding what groups people should be in. You can't use it for, you know, flowing to other places with more restricted. All you can do with free text is flow it to free text. rubbish. So let's try and get away from that. And the other thing, minimizing double entry. This sort of means two things, actually. It's a double entry, double thing. Obviously, we don't want duplicates. But the other thing is trying to minimize typing stuff in that's already somewhere else. So an example in a portal environment that I built earlier this year, they wanted the cost codes. They wanted users to have to select a cost code on their profile before they could select any IT services, which are then being billed against this cost code. Fine, where are we going to get that cost code from? Well, the worst thing to do is go and type in a whole list of cost codes in the portal because they will change. The best thing to do is to get a feed from somewhere. So if we can tap into the purchasing database and actually import those cost codes, then we're setting ourselves up better long term. And again, we're getting close to that, you know, the real source of the data. So just a little more on data sources, because this is so important. There's also two types of data source to consider. There's object sources and attribute sources. So an object source says this object, this identity, can exist in the identity management system. So your HR database is an object source for employees. Perhaps you have a student, you have students, and so the student roster is the object source for students. Now, as much as possible, per category of identity, you should only have one object source. The worst situation is when the same identity can be contributed from more than one place. And people do this. They say, oh, you know, like the example with the HR database where people didn't turn up for 5 days. Oh, we've already created the AD account by then, so we'll have both as a contributing object source. Terrible. You are guaranteeing that you will have duplicates in your identity meta system, and things don't work well when there are duplicates. So one object source per category of object, and the same with attribute sources as much as possible. There's a whole lot of precedent stuff you can do in FIM, but again, let's not compensate for bad data practices by muddying the waters inside FIM. If people want to change their job title in three different places, then, you know, that's a bad data practice. We need to say, no, from now on, the precedent source for job title is in HR if you're an employee, and it's in the FIM portal if you're a contractor, something like that. The other thing about sources is we need to make sure everyone actually understands where these precedent sources are, because things are going to change. So if I notice that my surname is misspelt in the Outlook address book, and I ring my local friendly IT person and I say, oh, they've spelled it Wapshire instead of Wapshire. Are people doing that all the time? I hate that. And so he very, you know, wanting to help, goes and changes my name in Active Directory. And that's all very well until the next FIM sync cycle, because FIM's getting my name out of HR, and that's where it's really misspelt. So people need to start understanding. You can't just go and fix it directly in your application like you used to if the precedent source is somewhere else. So, who likes cleaning? No, me neither. The fact of the matter is that we do need to do some cleanup when we integrate a new system into an identity and access management solution. Often people think that the rules that we're discussing will only apply to new people. But that is not the way we should be doing things. The idea with FIM is that we get everything joined up. We get every account joined to its source AD record or wherever its precedent object source is, and we manage them all with the same rules. FIM has no concept of this is a new person. It's just this object is connected to this object and here are my rules. So as much as possible, we need to do the cleanup work first. Get all those bins evenly shaped, you know? So there will be some work to do, and sometimes this can actually be really hard. I mean, I worked in one environment where they had 40,000 user accounts, international, 40 different countries around the world, all sorts of spellings, accented characters, people with an Asian name and a Western name, I mean everything. And this can actually be, gosh, somebody went crash. This can actually be quite a job in itself, so be prepared for it, depending on the environment. The other thing is moving unmanaged accounts out of scope. There will always be accounts that we actually don't want FIM to have anything to do with, service accounts, that sort of thing, admin accounts, move them out of scope. The best way to do it in AD is separate OUs. Same with groups. We might have managed groups, unmanaged groups. Keep them separate, everyone's clear. Get a full production data set for dev and test. I'm sort of doubling up here because note I'm not saying have dev and test. I'm assuming you have dev and test environments. All of you working with FIM, do you have dev and test environments? I always say you need a dev environment because with FIM there are three ways to do everything and the first way you think of is always wrong. So you need to have gone in and sandboxed that somewhere. You need a test environment, and your test environment should be as close as you can possibly get it to production. Because you can test your rules, but once they've started impacting the production data, it's hard to roll back. And many has been the person who has inadvertently disabled 2,000 accounts. It's happened. So as much as possible, I always try and get as much production data as I can for my dev and test environments. If I run my rules with 20 little idealized test accounts, it's going to work perfectly. I can promise you that. It's not until I've had the full gamut of all the lovely variations in naming conventions and goodness knows what else that I can actually tell you how many exceptions we've got. Do we need to be compensating for those exceptions? Do we need to be doing some more data cleanup? So this often means in, you know, you may just have an LDIF dump from Active Directory. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a full copy of all your applications. It might be a CSV export out of the voice system because you can't have the whole voice system in test as well. But as much as possible, try and get all the data and not just those 20 little perfect accounts. Right, just a couple of slides on implementation. I like this graph. I pinched this off a guy I used to work with who did ITIL projects, but I thought this applied equally well to identity and access management projects. I now expect the period of blame, so I don't let it get to me. I talked about having that full production data set, but the one thing you can't get in test is all the production practices. And, you know, users are so clever. Users are very clever. Without reading a single word that you've written, without looking at the help, without even reading the descriptions that you've put under the fields, they will come up with completely brand new ways to use the system that no one ever thought of. And so the fact of the matter is we do always get these kind of issues and we have to be looking at those and saying, is this a way of working that's valid that we need to accommodate in the system, or is this something that's actually wrong and we need to nail that down further so people can't do that? Obviously, people always remember vital requirements that they didn't happen to mention before. That goes without saying. And the confusion about what can be changed where. Again, make sure people are clear on the whole precedent source thing. FIM does need to be administered and looked after. You know, I've said it's not a set and forget system. I worked in, when I was in Switzerland working for an IT consultancy company there, and we were quite a small company. And we had FIM, and we had it purely for keeping our CRM database synchronized to contacts in Active Directory. That was all it did, you know, so that we could all have the convenience of all our customer contacts in our GAL. So honestly, that system I touched once every 6 months. But most of the customer systems I work on, they do need to be kind of watched and checked. There will be data errors. There will be incorrect joins. the odd duplicate, someone's done wrong data entry and something's gone a bit funny, and often these have to be unpicked by hand. Particularly with once you've got duplicates in FIM, in its metaverse, you have to fix it by hand. There's no automatic way I've ever found for sorting out duplicates. And the other thing is business rules will change, and we want our system to be able to change with the business rules. We don't want to install this system and say, right, that's it, job done. Don't need to touch that again. Because the business rules will change and then people will have to start working around FIM. Oh, it created the account like this and then we go and change it. No, let's consider FIM as to be a living, breathing thing that we have to continue tinkering, modifying, growing within our organisation to keep up with what we need. All right, what's next? Okay, return on investment, getting up to actually having a demo, so get rid of all these PowerPoint. Return on investment is a funny one to sort of analyse in any kind of concrete way with FIM. Partly, because essentially we're giving people something they have already. User accounts are already being created. Groups are being populated. It's just we're trying to do it consistently, efficiently, and securely as well, because we can actually make sure accounts are cut off when people leave and someone doesn't have to remember to do it. But it's hard to measure these changes. But one return on investment that I think is pretty clear is when you've gone and done the hard work of implementing your system, future application integrations become a lot easier. And that's what I based my demo on. So the idea here's my little scenario. I've got an organisation that's already done the HR AD sync and they've got FIM Portal in there as well. Now, the CIO has just heard about this fantastic new application called Project Star and he said, right, we are going to use this cloud-based application for all our project management tasks starting from tomorrow. Because, it's a cloud application, so you don't need any implementation time, do you? Is that right? This cloud application has a two-tiered subscription. Project managers are a lot more expensive, so obviously the business is going to want to minimise those licences wherever they can. And naturally, it does need accounts. They do need to be managed. The provider's given us two options. We can go with the manual creation through a web portal, the manual license assignment, or we can go with something a bit more automated with a federation token to actually set the license. So that's what we're going to do. Here's the scenario in pictures. So we have our HR to AD sync already happened. We've got the FIM portal there. So this has just been dropped into our environment. Now, one of the things I'm doing with the sync service is populating a CSV file. Most of the cloud applications I've worked with so far do need some kind of either synchronization or CSV upload. I think in time we'll see more providers doing, just-in-time provisioning purely based on the federation token. This is just for this example. I'm doing a synchronization as well as the federation token. So the federation token is for the login, and all that's going to include is the identifier, whether they're authenticated in their home Active Directory, and most importantly, what application role they should have in the application. So, now I've got to get onto the other computer here, which has gone to sleep. Okay. Now, some of this might be a bit hard to see. I'll try and do some zooming when I do anything really small. Anyway, this is the sync service. Those of you who don't know, this is where I connect to my various systems. Can everyone see that at the back? Yeah, enough? Good. So I'm connected to Active Directory. I've got an HR feed there. The FIMMA is the thing that actually connects the sync service to the portal. You'll see the portal in a sec. And here's just my little CSV file, which I'm populating and sending up to the cloud provided by FTP or something. And all I'm sending them is an email address, a first name and a last name. That's just so they can be prepared when the person comes knocking with their federation token. So let's go and have a look in the portal. So here's my FIM portal. Lovely looking thing. We'll open a user. And what I've done is I've extended this form here to include a new tab called Applications. And on this tab, I'm going to let users select that they would like to be able to use this application. And the other thing I've offered them is the chance to select a role. We'll stick with the project resource role right now. Obviously, we could have approval workflows there. Here, though, I'm just letting that request go straight through. Now, what's going to happen in the background is it's going to populate a group. So, project star users. This is a criteria-based group managed from the FIM portal. And it's just got a very, very simple rule here. Project star is true. And it was that user there. Okay? So that's just in the portal. Meanwhile, in the background, the synchronization service should have run, and it has. And I will zoom in on this in a sec. But there's one update to AD, and it's project star users, and we change the member. And just let me... there we go. So project star users, and you can see Adeline B is now a member of that group in Active Directory. Right, so that's Active Directory prepared. So now let's go and have a look at the application. Now, I have not done anything fancy with the application. It is on, it's on a standalone virtual server, so it's not part of the domain, but I've just used the claim app that you may have all seen by now. So this person is AB. Oh, why didn't that work? Right, that's fun. Should I switch to the recording at this point? Or should I try and reset? Why is the password stop working? I don't have the caps lock on. No, okay. You know what? I was prepared for this. I'm just going to go to the recording. Demo gods. Works perfectly whenever you practice it. Right, so let's just go through what we went through already. Where are we up to? That's that. Blah, blah, blah. Blah. Come on, we want to get to looking at the application. Yes, yes, yes. Okay, this is the bit where we go to the application. Here, I'll just pretend I'm doing it, okay? Okay, so this is just the default claim app, just so you can look at the contents of the Federation token. So first we've got the identifier, which is the email address, is authenticated, is true. And then we're going to scroll further down and you'll actually get to see a group claim. There we go. So this person is a member of the Project Star Users group. I might just continue with the recording at this point. So we're going to sign out there and then we're going to go back into the portal. And... going to set the project administrator's role. Oh, project manager, sorry. Project manager role. And again, like I said before, we could have an approval workflow at this point. Whoever's actually responsible for the, you know, for paying the bill for this application could be the one to approve that request. So Project Star PM's group, and that's the criteria, and our person is now a member of that group. And then we're just going to jump onto the sync service, and there we can see we've got one export. And there's a bit funny zoomy things happening here. Oh, that was very quick. Everyone see that? Did everyone see that? Anyway, the person is now a member of the Project Star PM's group, and that has been synchronized out to AD. And now we're going to go back in and test the application again. And this time, when we go down and have a look at those role claims, you can see we're now a member. We've got the PM role as well. So the application, obviously, will respond to this accordingly, give the right experience and bill it appropriately. Okay. And there is a last little bit to this demo, which it should go into now. You might have noticed that I had a date field underneath the role assignment. And the idea here is that we might want to give people the PM role just for a couple of months. and then revoke it again. And so here the idea is that I can actually stick in a date at which that role should expire. And in this demo here, I'm just going for a date in the past, which will basically force it to expire immediately. And now what's happening here is a very simple little workflow just runs in the background and very simply just sets the application role back to what it was before. So you see now we're back on a project resource role because that date was passed. So just a very simple way to manage that application in the FIM portal. Okay. So what did we learn? Okay, so we already know who our users are. So when the CIO said, I want to adopt this application tomorrow, we said, well, you know, we actually already have a complete list of all our users and information about them, so we can provide a user list straight away. That's nice. We can also manage that licensing through an internal portal. No one has to learn a new interface. We can control the costs using an internal system. We can ensure Federation tokens contain correct information. Now, this is something that I think, again, is growing, this idea of using Active Directory as an identity store for all sorts of information that has got nothing to do with running servers and logging in from workstations. How do we ensure that data is correct? Because we now have security and compliance requirements that may well be watching this. And finally, we can allow self-service, we can delegate the approval task to someone else, and so it minimises tasks for the IT department. So, I got through that quickly. This is my last slide. And as I started with Charles Sturt, I thought I would end with him as well. So here is a picture of Charles Sturt using his boat to great effect when he mapped out the Murray River, the first white man to travel the length of the Murray River. And the take-home points I want to leave you with. Understanding the environment. And there's a couple of guys here who were saying that this had been their big challenge on the project they were doing. It's so important to really understand what are the processes. Does HR have some weird process where they put the data in the database 5 days after the person starts? You know, how are we going to find those things out? Develop for automation. And it's, you know, think of it as task automation as well. We're not trying to do artificial intelligence here. We're not trying to build our own little system administrator. We are automating tasks. And things will need to be in nice, even shapes for us to do that. And finally, just be realistic. Be realistic about what FIM can do. And be realistic about how much you can achieve in one project phase. Keep your requirements realistic, and I believe you should all have excellent success in architecting your own identity and access management solutions with Forefront Identity Manager. So, that's that. Like I said, I've got another talk tomorrow, which is more of a technical best practices. As I have finished a few minutes early, I can take a couple of questions if anyone has them. Otherwise, I'm more than happy to chat any time during the course of the conference. I'm here for the rest of the week. Yes? Oh, yes. Yeah, I've done, so this is about university environment where people can be both student and staff, and I've actually done a few university projects, and I will say one thing about universities, their identity data is in better shape than anyone's. I think because there is this whole notion of student enrolment, and so, you know, often the data's there, but yes, this whole notion that people can be enrolled in multiple courses, they can be staff as well as student, and you do have to start using precedences in some ways. Sometimes, you know, the best thing is actually to put a layer between those data sources and FIM. So you actually put a database layer in between, funnel everything through that, and sort of, you know, work out exactly what identity you then want to present to the identity management system. I mean, the other thing is just straight precedences. So you might say, well, if they're staff and student, then staff attributes always win over student ones. Yes, exactly. Yeah, happy to talk to you more in more depth about it. But yes, these complications are very real and always exist. I mean, the one thing that I don't like is projecting people separately, having a staff identity and a student identity. Like to try and avoid that, but yeah. Anyone else? No? Okay, well, thank you very much. And fill in your evaluations and all that.